Hi FM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Dr. Carl, a very, very good morning to you. I hope you're well.
Ever so peachy keen. I've just spent 3 days filming about fire stations, which I now know are called fire and rescue stations. And man, when you're using the smaller hose, so I had a go at playing with a hose.
Yes.
There's two hoses.
Right.
There's a 38 mil diameter, which is, you know, like inch and a half, and 700 mil, which is a bit smaller than your fist.
Right.
The 38 mil pushes out water at 1/4 of a ton per minute.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's
and so
a lot.
You have to get down on one knee and sort of spread your body out, and you're leaning into it and you're holding it. I shudder at what 2 tons of water per minute would be like. I imagine you have to have some sort of frame. But I learned a lot, and I learned about how to cut the side of a car open when there's a collision,
right.
Somebody's trapped inside, the doors won't open, or maybe the dashboard has squashed them. So depending on how serious it is and various other circumstances, it can take between 5 minutes and over an hour to get somebody out. And it's a wonderful combination of hand tools. And when I'm saying hand tools, I mean stuff that weighs 20 kilograms, right? It's a big, heavy hand tool. And you can just cut. You can cut or spread with 20 to 120 tons force. You just cut through bolts like they're not there.
In South Africa, we call it the jaws of life. Is it the same term there?
Yeah, so there's four tools.
Mm-hmm.
There's the cutter, there's the spreader, and there's a combi cutter and spreader, and then there's finally a hydraulic ram, where if you've got a door frame that is no longer roughly rectangular, you can put things on the diagonal and force it open. And it was this wonderful combination of humans using hand tools and a lovely ballet. There were four of them, and they were just sort of going in, I do this, you do that, and gradually the car just peeled away over about 10 minutes, and it was wonderful to see it. Did you ever realize that that rescue was such a big part?
No, I didn't.
No, neither did I. And then there was an even bigger emergency on one day when we were in the fire station, where the next-door neighbors came in, and their Scandinavian-made kit that they bought, which was to assemble a cat pram, they couldn't assemble it, so they got the fire officers to do it for them. Big emergency.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, did you know that there isn't even such a thing as a cat pram?
No,
I had no idea that you could buy a pram for your cat.
Yeah,
okay.
And how do you encourage your cat to stay in it? That's the other question. I don't know.
Life has many mysteries.
It does indeed. So the light bulbs being one of them, because they didn't seem to last very, very long, or sometimes they don't. Tell us about that.
Well, it was actually a genuine case of planned obsolescence, which is now very well documented. So way back in the early 20th century, if you had a light bulb in your house, oh my God, so much better to have an electric light bulb rather than a wood fire or candle or gas flame, which coated the ceiling with soot. And as they moved forward from the early 20th century a bit further in, each model would last longer and burn brightly, and the manufacturers competed and they tried new filaments. And then suddenly, by the mid-1920s, the life expectancy of the light bulbs didn't stay the same. They dropped from 2,000 hours to 1,000 hours. And now we know, beginning in the 70s, we've got the data, that the big companies got together. And they had a cool name called the Phoebus, Phoebus cartel. And look it up on Wikipedia. And their specific plan was to bring in light bulbs that were all the same across the industry. So it didn't matter who you bought it from, it'd be the same. Nobody would be better than anybody else. And it was shorter. It was half the 2,000 hours. It was 1,000 hours. And so you had people from Europe, such as from the Netherlands, and Osram from Germany, and Philip from the Netherlands and from Hungary. You had General Electric in the USA, and you had companies in the United Kingdom. They all got together and they kept it really quiet. And nobody knew about it at the time, what was actually going on. Incredible. And the way we found out about it was that during the Second World War, the cartel fell apart because winning the war or losing the war was much more important. And it was only from the 1970s to the 1990s that the archives of these companies opened up, and independent researchers suddenly said, hey, guess what I found? And the people there had no idea of what had been done in the past. And in fact, the cartel set up a whole bureaucracy to cheat the customers. And so each company that was a member had to submit bulbs at random times for analysis. Mm-hmm. And if they lasted too long, they'd be fined. And so the deal was that they would all have light bulbs of exactly the same 1,000 hour standard, and it made no difference. And so that way they could keep on making money. So that's one of the rare cases of a claim of planned obsolescence to be actually proven.
Unbelievable. I was so looking forward to discussing this one as well with you because, I don't know, it's always a conversation. Rice. Do you rinse your rice before cooking? And while Dr. Carl gives us the some of the information about it, send me your messages, 061-895-1019. Do you rinse rice before you cook it? Dr. Carl, over to you.
Well, yes and no, depending. Okay, so rice, traditionally, is grown in shallow, flooded fields because it has to be wet all the time. And so you get the grains and you can't eat them. What you've got to do is mill them to remove the outer layer called the hull, H-U-L-L, and then that gives you brown rice. And it's brown because it's got bran in it, which is nice fiber, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
But some people don't like it, so then they can mill it even further, remove the bran, which is good for you, and give you white rice.
Right.
And people were saying that, well, the rice is left with a layer of starch on the outside, and so the rice gets really sticky. And so if you rinse it, you'll wash that starch away. And people in 2019, I'll just switch that off, and so people in 2019 speculated that washing the rice might change the texture, and then later research found that it made no difference to the stickiness of the rice. If you want sticky rice, you should go for glutinous, and if you don't want sticky, go for medium grain or jasmine. There's no real difference between them. The washing makes no difference. However, there are health and safety reasons. So we'll go sort of organic and inorganic first, which is plastic and metals and little stones and small parts of the husk and even arsenic in some parts of the world. Now, in our modern society, it is typically cleaned with machines and blowed and milled and graded and packed, and it's and dried, so it's pretty clean anyway. But some of them do have some arsenic on the outside, which was absorbed from the soil. And you can wash it away, but it's such a small amount. And most rice doesn't have it. But it can also remove good chemicals on the outside, like copper, iron and zinc and vanadium. But the amount that you get from rice is microscopic, so you can forget about that.
Okay.
The other thing is that rinsing the rice can rinse off the microplastics, and it can reduce the amount of microplastics by 30%. Now, we know there are microplastics everywhere. We have not proven that they're bad for your health. We're very suspicious, and the endocrinologists, the hormone doctors, they're saying that the chemicals in the microplastics look like the hormones of reproduction in the human body and in fish and other sorts of creatures, but it's only a correlation. Like, there's a really good correlation between the divorce rate in the state of Maine in the top right-hand corner of the USA and the daily consumption of chicken across the whole USA. But somebody having chicken in Alabama does not cause somebody in Maine to have a divorce. So it's just an accidental correlation.
Right.
So after the long and short, they were saying, oh, if you feel like it, give it a gentle rinse. That's good enough. But if you don't want to, you don't have to. But here's something else. Do you get your plastic in a... You do get your rice in a plastic container, and I do.
Yes.
But I remember back when I was a hippie, I used to go down to the markets, and I'd carry a bag with me, you know, a cloth bag.
Yes.
And I'd get them to scoop it out and out of big, you know, bags, maybe 40 kilos. Anyway, so there you have it. Maybe yes, maybe no. Probably doesn't make much difference. Maybe your choice, your call, whatever you feel like.
Dr. Carl, that's where we leave it. Thank you, as always. What an awesome conversation with Dr. Carl.